Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to episode 16 of the Tempcast, the official GBA Temp podcast. Today, I'm joined by Eric.
Hey, everyone. What's going on?
Steven.
Hey, what's up, everybody?
And a special guest today, our executive producer, Chari, is joining us in the studio. Please clap for Chari. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. It's good to be back.
Yes. And for what an occasion, because today is a great day. By the way, it's beautiful outside. It's quite warm for a winter day. But not just that. It's one of our hosts' birthday. It's Eric Zander's birthday. Ladies and gentlemen, please, let's congratulate Eric on his...
It is.
How old are you, Eric?
I'm old enough to not want to tell you how old I am, but oh my goodness, it's my birthday.
Yes, it is. Happy 21st birthday.
20XDX.
Happy 75th birthday.
I'm 27. Woo!
Not just that, but during the week, we got some news. Eric, I don't know if you know this.
Yes.
But... you passed the bar.
Oh my God, I did pass the bar exam. Finally, I can stop telling you guys that I'm not a lawyer because I did it, Reddit. I did it. I want to thank myself first and foremost because I'm the greatest. And also, go me. I did it. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. But that's not all. That's not all. Because I know you love video games and... stuff. So I got a special character. That's right. A voice actor from one of your favorite games. That's right.
Oh my gosh.
You with your birthday. That's right. Can you believe it?
I can't.
Yeah. I have the voice thing right here. And let's listen to it right now. Right now.
Hey, Eric Zander, happy birthday. And congratulations with the bar exam. I love you.
Oh my gosh, was that Sonic the Hedgehog himself? I'm so happy right now.
Yes, yes. I paid so much money for that. You can't imagine.
Oh, I'm crying.
I spent my entire Tempcast salary on that, on those 5 seconds. But anyways, we love you, Eric, just like Sonic does. So thank you so much for being a part of this podcast. And are we done with this shit?
Yeah, can we move on? Like, it's getting kind of obnoxious.
All right, so the first topic we're going to be talking about today is the fact that PlayStation 2 games are now up and running on the Xbox Series S and Series X thanks to developer mode. Chari, could you enlighten us on the current situation in the Xbox homebrew scene?
Well, first of all, the Xbox Series X is running PS2 games and more than the PS5 can.
Very true.
But it's a pretty tricky process at this point. I mean, it is a really cool party trick that you can pull out and be like, hey, look, PS2 games on the Xbox. But you do have to get developer mode running, which is easy, but you do have to pay a fee. You do have to get a finicky build of RetroArch because it's an in-development build. It's not really fully compatible with every game, but it is working, and I mean, you can play a certain amount of games at actual playable frame rate.
So yeah, from what I understand, using this developer mode, Microsoft basically are trying to create this universal platform across Xbox and Windows, which means that you can only run not exe files on the Xbox, but UWPs, which if you have Windows installed and you have the Windows Store, basically all the programs that you buy and games as well through the Windows Store, they come in this UWP format. I think it stands for Universal Windows Platform or something.
I thought it was UWA, Universal Windows Application.
It might be. You know, I'm not an expert on this stuff. I'm only like a podcast host who does this for a living. So what do I know about technology?
It is UWA.
It's UWA.
Yeah.
Oh, you're so stupid, Alan Jones.
It's the OUYA. Or the ooh-wah, I guess.
I guess the only limitation at this point is that I believe that PS2 games, the only ones that'll run on this are those that are smaller than 2 gigabytes or 2 gigabytes or smaller. So a lot of bigger ones you won't be able to play right now off the bat on your Xbox. But it is really cool that just sort of out of the box and then paying that developer mode fee, you're able to do all this. Like Chari said, it's a pretty neat party trick.
Do you think Microsoft is gonna, you know, somehow put an end to this? I don't know what their stance is on emulation and stuff like that, because emulators by themselves are completely legal. That's a fact, I think.
RetroArch is coming to Steam, so I don't think there's any issue or anything they can do to RetroArch itself. But the fact that people are playing PlayStation 2 games on their Xbox is pretty sketchy in a way that it implies that you're not playing your legal backup.
In theory, you could. I think use like an external CD drive and put like a PlayStation 2 game and then run it through RetroArch. I think that's possible. I read somewhere that's possible. However, who are the people who used to own like PS2 games and then switch to Xbox? Do these people even exist?
I'm sure they do. The 360 was the dominant force for the first part of that generation. So I'm sure a lot of people went from PS2 to 360, especially since at that point there was no real brand loyalty. You didn't have an online account with digital purchases or trophies or whatever that you wanted to stay committed to. And there was very little online play, so you didn't have to stay on the same console as your friends.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what happened. I remembered all of my friends had a PS2, and most of them switched over to the Xbox 360 when that came out, mostly because the PS3 was really, really expensive. Yeah, like Steven said, there wasn't a whole lot of brand loyalty at that point. Now it's a little harder to switch from Sony to Microsoft just because of the, you know, trophies or achievements and things like that. But back then, there wasn't that much of a barrier.
I also just want to say, going back a little bit as to whether or not Microsoft will remove RetroArch from this developer mode, you've been able to do this on the Xbox One for a little while, and to my knowledge, haven't done anything about it. So I'd say this is probably a pretty safe bet that it'll stay.
I watched Modern Vintage Gamer's video about it. It's pretty informative. You guys should check it out. Seeing Metal Gear Solid 2 run on an Xbox. I mean, wait. Metal Gear Solid HD Collection, that came out, so, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Wait, no, that didn't... Did it include Metal Gear Solid 2?
It did. It had 2, 3, and Peace Walker.
Yeah, okay, so that's not that impressive. However...
Also, Substance was on the original Xbox.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Wow, why did I think that Metal Gear was a Sony exclusive?
Because the first and fourth one weren't. I mean, were, I guess. So it's, you know, it's forgivable.
I think only Metal Gear 3 and 4 were Sony exclusives, right?
The first one was. But I think the second one, or I think 3 was on Xbox. I could be wrong. Let me check that real quick.
I think it was. I want to say it was. I think it's interesting, though, that you can just pull out RetroArch without much effort. I mean, you do have to get it running and go through the whole rigmarole. But once you've done it, I mean, you can't say that about the PS5. Although, how many people are buying their gigantic mini-fridge Xbox to play NES games on them?
Also, how many people are buying these consoles at all? Because they don't exist.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. They're not real.
No, they're an illusion.
I'll tell you one thing about this. It's the fact that Microsoft wasn't lying when they said that the Xbox Series X would be fully backwards compatible. They really meant it.
Yeah.
But another thing that I think is cool about this, which I don't think we've touched on yet, is the fact that this really, really de-incentivizes people from actually hacking the Xbox, right? Because, you know, you have access to a lot of stuff right off the bat. And this is stuff that you could do on your PC anyway. Like, I don't have a gaming PC. I just got a laptop, and I could totally play PS2 games on it. I could play Wii games on it and all of that. So just by allowing you to do it on Xbox, it totally de-incentivizes any reason to hack it unless you wanted to pirate Xbox One or, you know, Series X games. And that's what the hackers, by and large, like to at least say is not their goal.
Yeah.
The cover story. And to be fair, if you're trying to look at pirating Xbox Series X games, it's only $1 for 3 months of Game Pass, and you pretty much get all the major titles on the Series X anyway. So there's really no reason that anyone's going to be taking a crack at this console for a while, if ever, I feel like.
Yeah, absolutely.
All the hacking eyes are on the PlayStation 5, if the hackers can even get them.
Exactly. The ball's kind of in Sony's court at this point, because it's been made clear that it's possible to emulate these older games on newer consoles. Obviously, we knew that, but I guess, are we going to get an official way to play PS1 and 2 and 3 games on the PS5? Or, well, I guess we already have it for the PS3
PS Now.
PlayStation Now, PS Now. You'd think that there could be an official emulator that'll let you do it, you know. Yeah, that is streaming, but, you know, if an official emulator would let you do it, I don't see why they wouldn't.
No, because Sony hates you.
At this point, all you really need is a libretro build of the PlayStation 3 emulator. That's it. Once it gets there, once you can download that core, I really want to see, because PlayStation 3 emulation, it's possible, though only on powerful PCs. That would have been surreal. Imagine seeing a PlayStation 3 game on an Xbox. That would be interesting. Metal Gear Solid 4 on an Xbox Series S.
That would be mind-blowing.
Yeah, that would be good. That would be nice.
Yeah.
I want an Xbox 360 emulator on the Series X just for the redundancy of it.
Eric, you were talking about companies de-incentivizing people from hacking their consoles. I think Nintendo did something like that recently, or there's some Nintendo hacker that has recently been de-incentivized from hacking, hasn't he?
Yes, exactly. So Nintendo's taking a slightly different approach, whereas Microsoft is basically saying, hey, look.
They're more the carrot, Nintendo's the stick.
Exactly. Microsoft's more like, hey, let's de-incentivize them by making it easy to do everything that you want. Whereas Nintendo's de-incentivizing by saying, if you try this, you're fucked. So here's the deal. And this is not really funny, but basically what happened, back in 2016, there was this guy, his name was Ryan Hernandez. He was known as Ryan Rocks on the internet. He basically used a phishing technique to get a hold of a Nintendo employee's credentials. He then used that info to download pre-release promo info about the Switch, which at the time was just called codename NX, right? So he got reported to the FBI. The FBI warned him to stop doing that illegal stuff, and he politely said, okay, I'll be a good boy, I promise, I'm not going to do any of that stuff anymore. But then, jump ahead to 2018, he hacked directly into Nintendo servers. He stole confidential information that he then leaked to the internet, so he didn't heed the warning. So once again, he got caught by the FBI, who seized his computers and his hard drives. Now, what did they find besides Nintendo's confidential information, you might ask? Well, they found hundreds of pictures and videos of child pornography within a folder aptly named Bad Stuff. So I looked into this case, and I'll give some more technical info about what he was charged with, what he was sentenced with, and, you know, I'll define some, you know, terminology and legal jargon. But before I do that, I want to open the floor. What do you guys think about this crazy shit?
It was bad stuff.
That's pretty bad stuff. Wow, that was basically the end of it. Should we have started a new segment for this story called Bad Stuff? Or Small Stuff?
Right.
I mean, are you sure about that? I mean, in the context of what it meant on his computer?
Yeah, we're not calling it Bad Stuff.
Come to the Tempcast for your weekly news roundup of Bad Stuff. Sorry. Let's move on. I apologize. Just
quotation marks. Guys, this isn't like a story where a kid hacked his Switch and then Nintendo put him in jail, or this doesn't even come close to something as petty as SXOS. I mean, SXOS is Peppa Pig stuff compared to this. Like, he hacked personal information and stuff, so why would you put it in a folder called Bad Stuff? That's like the first place anybody would look for bad stuff. You don't call your basement a sex dungeon unless you don't mind people knowing you've got a sex dungeon down there.
Alan John learned that the hard way, speaking from experience.
What I'm saying is that this situation, I don't feel bad for anybody, to be honest.
Except the kids. Let's clarify that.
Ricardo Lopez, or whoever this guy is, I hope he doesn't hack me. Please don't hack me. My security is just trash. The Kaspersky license I had on my computer, it's expired a long time ago. So yeah, basically my computer is unprotected. Please don't look for my IP address and don't hack me, please. I have a lot of valuable stuff on my computer. Thank you. And that goes to all the hackers. Please don't hack any of us on GBA temp, especially me. Thank you.
I think it's especially stupid that this kid was a minor and he had his chance to be like, okay, I understand, Mr. FBI. I mean, the only reason why they probably didn't pop him before was because he was a kid. And then he grew up and he was like, oh, you know what? They caught me the first time. I'm not going to make any effort to hide anything. I'm not even going to try and learn from my mistakes. Oh, well, he reaped what he sowed and he kind of sounds like he was just an idiot rich kid that was just like, ah, there's no consequences to life.
Clearly.
Yeah, I mean, remember GeoHots?
Yeah.
The guy who hacked the PlayStation and then went to jail for it, I think? Or at least was under house arrest?
Oh, was that when PSN was shut down for an extended period of time? Or is that something different?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, he reverse engineered the PlayStation 3. That's and also did iOS jailbreaks. Now he's like a serious developer and stuff. He's like an entrepreneur, does podcasts and stuff. So he's basically the success story of a hacker. He's an expert in cybersecurity now. You know, if Ricardo here or whatever his name is would have done the same, you know, taken matter into his own hands, then maybe stuff would have been different. But no, he chose the wrong way, the wrong path in life.
You had more you wanted to say, right, Eric? Or?
Yeah, our resident lawyer.
Now, here's the thing that drives me a little crazy. So there's this conspiracy going around the GBA temp. It's kind of bothering me. So what some people are doing, they're arguing with absolutely no evidence whatsoever that Nintendo and or the FBI planted child porn on this guy's computer. They have no basis for the argument, but if I had to make an argument for them, it would be that there was an earlier Nintendo hacker slash pedophile back in 2017. I think his last name was Edvilson, Thomas Edvilson. So he was caught with child porn back then. He was the owner of a free shop for the 3DS. Now, he was actually sentenced to 20 years for this shit. But in that case, he was actually hosting a website that hosted child porn. All right. So instead of following the logical conclusion that both of these people who hacked Nintendo were pedophiles and had access to child porn, some people say that it must be a giant conspiracy. Nintendo is, or the FBI, you know, because this happens, they're planting this stuff. Ignoring the fact that the earlier dude was actually hosting this stuff. It's like, why would he put this stuff in a folder called bad stuff unless it was planted? Now, I've been trying to sort of debunk this conspiracy in the forums in Hernandez's case. I know that back in 2017, somebody else was debunking the whole conspiracy over there. But okay, I guess I'm sounding like a broken record, so I'll just open the floor again. What do you guys think about this conspiracy?
Nintendo's in bed with the FBI, and I've known it all along, and finally, all my theories have been realized.
Oh no, you're one of them.
Now, Eric, I saw a murder documentary once where cops planted evidence. Doesn't that mean that every bit of evidence ever is always suspect, and the feds definitely planted the child porn on this guy's computer?
See, what some people are doing is they are bringing up that kind of argument. So, it's not a good one to use, but so I don't think I actually talked about what this dude was sentenced to. So he pled guilty to a 2-count information and... I guess I'll explain that. So an information as opposed to an indictment is, so an indictment's when you're charged by, you have to go before a grand jury and they have to say that there's enough evidence to say that you can be charged with this stuff. Whereas an information, you don't have to have evidence, or you don't have to present it before a grand jury or a judge or anything like that, that you just get indicted. The thing about the Fifth Amendment, the Fifth Amendment gives us the right to be indicted by a grand jury as opposed to being charged with an information. So because he was charged with an information, that means that he either waived his right to a grand jury or he pled guilty. And in this case, he pled guilty. So you'd think that if Nintendo and or the FBI planted child porn on him, he would not plead guilty so that he wouldn't have an indictment and then plead guilty so that he was basically punished for having the child porn. Basically, he's saying, yes, I had this stuff. I'm pleading guilty in exchange for a lesser sentence, which is why he was only sentenced to 3 years in jail and had to pay $260,000 in restitution to Nintendo. Dude pled guilty. I understand that people plead guilty when they're innocent often, But I have no reason whatsoever to think that he wasn't guilty in this case.
I mean, it's pretty obvious he was forced to plead guilty by some Yakuza boss who traveled to the Americas and almost beat him to death and tortured him using ancient Yakuza Nintendo torture techniques in order to make him plead guilty. It's obvious.
Strapped a virtual boy to his face.
The worst punishment.
And this isn't really a legal argument. It's more of a common sense argument. But you'd think that the guy who was doing illegal stuff on the internet, such as using that phishing technique to get access to Nintendo stuff, was then warned and then continued to do it, continued breaking the law on the internet. Isn't this the type of person who would also be doing other illegal things on the internet? Like, it seems to me that I wouldn't be surprised why he, as well as the developer of Free Shop, both also had child porn. They just seem like the types of people who would have it. And I know that it's like, oh, you're making generalizations, but really that's not a legal argument. That is a generalization. But I have found no evidence that this stuff was planted. It just seems completely outrageous. Like, if it looks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, it's probably a duck. You know what I mean?
Yeah. While we're on the subject, can I address the people that have been saying that they feel bad for him and it's not a big deal to be in possession of child porn because he wasn't producing it?
I mean...
or hosting it?
Really? Are you going to make that argument? Come on, guys. No.
I'm not making... No, I'm saying there are people in the...
No.
Yeah. A lot of people are saying that, and like, I mean, they're both fucking felonies. They're both pretty bad. Like, I don't know. It's like, I don't know. I was talking to someone about this the other day, and I made the argument that, like, gamers will boycott a company if they, like, don't use dedicated servers for an online shooter, or, like, their character or their game has a gay character in it or something. But they don't think you should not support child pornographers, that if you... that there's a moral issue with giving money to Activision, but there's not a moral issue with giving money to child pornographers, is apparently the stance of some of GBA Temp's users.
The real thing that is even crazier about that, they're like, look, if you're just watching it, you're not actually hurting the kids. And it's like, bro, they wouldn't be doing this if nobody was watching it. It's like, you're creating the demand for this stuff. You are directly hurting these kids. And especially if like that earlier guy's sharing it with people.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, it's just...
yeah.
Distribution is a lot worse than just saving, I think.
Which is why the Cruel got 20 years and this dude got 3.
I mean, I guess devil's advocate, the argument would be that...
All right, play devil's advocate in this case. Go for it.
You got to do it. We got to talk this out. Devil's advocate, I guess the argument is that if this guy didn't have access to already produced child porn, he might go produce his own child porn, and then a larger number of children are being...
How is that devil's advocate? Do you even know what that means? You're just incriminating him even further.
Well, no, I'm saying, like, it's okay for him to have child porn if it means he isn't making any others, I guess is the argument these people might make. Maybe. Is that... am I making any sense?
No, because you're shouting the opinion of a crazy person, honestly. Just go to jail, go directly to jail.
I'm trying to think what they might be thinking is the... yeah, I'm not saying that's my opinion.
If we were told that it was, like, not real photographs or videos, whatever, but it was, like, animated and drawn.
Right.
You know, hentai, stuff like that.
Yeah.
It would have been a completely different argument, though my stance would have been the same. But you'd have a lot more people on the internets arguing, oh, so it's okay, it's just imaginary, it's all right, it's still fucked up.
It's so messed up, but at the same time, you can say, like, a human being wasn't harmed. A small child was not harmed in the creation of a drawing, at the very least.
Yeah, there was somebody in the forums trying to sort of make that argument, but then he backtracked when I called him out on it. But he was basically talking about how, what if it was just, you know, hentai? What if it was just Japanese cartoons but that depicted little kids? Then it would have been okay. And it's like, that's not what he had in this case, because clearly he could have had terabytes of hentai and it would have been totally fine. Well, weird, but it would have been totally legal. Because it's legal. That's legal. It's just what he got caught with was...
bad stuff.
Illegal child porn.
Yeah, bad stuff.
Pictures and videos.
The real deal, real bad. real monstrous stuff.
Bad stuff.
Yeah, bad stuff.
It's like, and he didn't encrypt it. See, the thing is, the dude was ballsy. He didn't encrypt anything. He didn't even hide it in a folder called, like, WinRAR Terms and Services or something that nobody would find. He put it right there.
Was there even a password?
He didn't even put it in a folder called Good Stuff. Like,
Good Stuff, there's nothing bad here.
Well, you know what? That might have been equally as likely to get the FBI to go like, huh.
I mean, I'm sure they screw up the whole computer no matter what, I would imagine, no matter what it was called.
Just burn those hard drives in a fire.
He even lost the ability to say, oh, I didn't realize that it was bad. Well, clearly, you knew it was bad. You knew it was bad stuff, bro.
Yeah,
that's rough. I would, not going to lie, I would want tickets to the court hearing where he argues he didn't know it was bad. That would be an amazing argument to watch. So,
there you go. I don't know. Now, clearly, I highly respect the fact that people are innocent until proven guilty. Dude pled guilty in this case, but there's no reason to think that this is fake. If there was any indication that this stuff was planted, then we'd be singing a different story right now. It's just, it seems so cut and dry that this dude had that stuff. So I just don't get the conspiracy theory whatsoever. I don't understand where it's coming from.
I like it. I like the idea that Nintendo is so anti-hacker that they literally bribed the FBI to plant CP on hackers' computers.
And that the FBI is willing to go along with this.
Exactly. And that they didn't do it with Gary Bowser. They just did it with these other two guys. You know, let me clarify. This did not happen with the SXOS guys. They didn't have any child porn or anything. It was just the Free Shop guy and this guy. As far as I know, it was just those two.
So can I ask, did this guy have a GBA temp account?
He did.
Do we know?
Yep.
Ryan Rocks, right?
Yeah, Ryan Rocks was this guy, and I think Charlie mentioned it earlier, the other guy's name was The Cruel.
Okay, and Gary Opa also, Gary Bowser had a GBA temp account, right?
Yes.
Therefore, I would like to submit a new conspiracy theory that the admins of GBA temp are planting child porn on these people's computers and reporting them to the FBI.
I'm not going to comment on that.
Costello's got some explaining to do. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. You heard it here first.
The moderators. The mag staff is fine. It's the moderators over there.
Yeah. Mag staff is not real staff.
I mean, if you think about it, since I got this job, you know, we've only seen arrests, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all Alan John's fault.
That's just a theory.
Anyways, speaking of bad stuff, BioWare has actually lost some of their key developers.
Just to clarify, it had nothing to do with bad stuff. They weren't arrested for bad stuff. That's not how they lost them. It's not why they're leaving the company.
Yeah, so Casey Hudson and Mark Dara, however you pronounce that surname, have suddenly departed the studio from BioWare, and they've both worked and were working on Dragon Age 4. And okay, so Hudson was working for Mass Effect, and Mark was steering Dragon Age for ages, was developing Dragon Age 4. So both of them have departed, which leaves BioWare in a place of creative uncertainty, I would say, because who's going to be the main director of Dragon Age 4? What kind of direction is that game heading into? Because I know there are a lot of Dragon Age fans. I used to know a Dragon Age fan before we parted ways, but that's a long story. So Dragon Age 4 has been in development for some time, and as we know, these kind of games at EA, they've got rough development cycles. For example, I remember the Star Wars RPG that was developed by, what studio? What was that studio's name? I don't remember. Might have been BioWare? No, I don't think BioWare did that. So yeah.
Is it the 1313?
After that, but before Fallen Order.
Knights of the Old Republic?
I don't remember. Oh yeah, I remember what you're talking about. I can't remember. Yeah, I don't remember.
Yeah, so that game started up as just an RPG, like something like Uncharted. And then the EA executives said, like, oh, no, we want to make this game like Destiny. We want to make it like you got pay to win. You got games as a service, basically.
Oh, Battlefront.
No, it's not Battlefront. No. It's like, but yeah, basically Battlefront.
It sort of sounded like you were describing Anthem there also. Like, started off as an RPG, became a pay-to-win live service thing like Destiny.
Yeah, that's what I was getting into. So EA doesn't really understand what an RPG is. They think, oh, Destiny. Destiny. You mean Destiny? No, something like Skyrim. Oh, Destiny 2. Yeah. I hope it's not because EA has went into that direction again with Dragon Age, trying to make it into games for service, games as a service game. And Mass Effect, what's even going on with Mass Effect? I mean, we had the Legendary Edition of the trilogy get announced. Still not announced for the Switch, surprisingly. Seems that's not happening, unfortunately. And yeah. Mass Effect Andromeda was a flop, to say the least, creatively and financially. So, oh, BioWare is still working on Anthem. They're reworking it from the ground up, I think.
Yeah. Well, the guy that was in charge of that Anthem reboot, I think is what they're calling it. His name is Christian Daly.
Yep.
He's now being put in charge of the new Dragon Age. He's being put in charge of Dragon Age 4.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. According to a report by Forbes. For what it's worth, because I don't believe that was in BioWare's statement, at least not that I saw.
I mean, this isn't the first time that BioWare has faced, like, mass exodus of people. They've lost a lot of lead writers that were working on the original Mass Effect trilogy. They lost a lot of people just when they were working on Anthem in general, because it was so much in turmoil. So, what's another two people gone from BioWare? Because I think this is becoming a situation where the company is going to end up a shell of its former self, and honestly, if I cared about a single BioWare game, I would probably be upset at this point.
Quickly, I want to fact check myself. I said that they didn't say who was taking over Dragon Age in their statement, but they did. Christian Daly is in their official statement as the new Dragon Age project lead. But also, I don't think BioWare is going to end up a shell of its former self. I think, well, A, I kind of think it's already there, and B, I think it's going to end up dead pretty soon, mm-hmm. because EA is kind of notorious for purchasing... companies and shutting them down. They did that to Visceral, who made Dead Space. They did it to Origin, who made Ultima and Wing Commander and stuff like that back in the 90s. They did it to a couple others. They did it to the Saboteur guys. I think they were called Pandemic. They have a history of doing this.
Visceral Games is probably the studio I was thinking about that they gave Star Wars to make a Star Wars RPG. I think it was Visceral.
Oh, you might be right. Yeah, that would make sense. Yeah.
And what was that? Pandemic Studios, was that what it's called?
Yeah, and they made the Saboteur.
They made the original Battlefront games. Everybody loved those. They made Battlefront, Battlefront 2. Yeah, they killed them as well.
They've killed a lot of people.
Not people, but studios.
Well, yeah, I apologize.
At the very least, a lot of these people are finding jobs at other studios, which is good. Like Mike Laidlaw, who was one of the writers for Mass Effect, I think he left the company 2 or 3 years ago, and now he's working as his own owner of a game studio. So it might end up for the best for some things, because I don't think a lot of people are expecting, after Andromeda, is anyone really expecting classic Mass Effect anymore?
Yeah, I remember people asking for EA to let BioWare make another Star Wars game. And I was like, are you sure you want that? I don't think that's a good idea. Knights of the Old Republic 3. And I'm like, no, you probably don't want that.
Mm. Well, Obsidian or Black Isle worked on the second one. So if they got a hold of it, I don't think it would be bad. I mean, BioWare only worked on one. There's a lot of BioWare games that they made a one of, like Neverwinter Nights. And those series are thought like, oh yeah, that's BioWare's game. But then Obsidian or Black Isle, as they were formerly known, came in and made a sequel. And so it's really, was it BioWare that made that game you're thinking of? Or was it Obsidian in a lot of cases?
Well, at this point, we're definitely not going to get Knights of the Old Republic 3 because of the fact that 1 and 2 have been decanonized by Disney. So if there's another Knights of the Old Republic, it would have to not follow. It would have to be its completely different, or I guess a sort of pseudo remake of the first or second one, or both.
I mean, they could make a game in the same genre with a different name.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying that specifically.
Right.
They wouldn't just make a sequel to that one. They would have to make a different game in the same vein. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty much dead.
Oh, by the way, we are in all the small things segment right now. So that was part of our small things segment. And the next thing in our small things segment is, I'm looking at the screen right now at the list, and it's something called Faces of Death. Now, I know a certain Faces of Death, which is a 1978 film, I guess you could call it.
Sure.
Steven, why do you want us to talk about this?
I might have made a mistake. Let me double check what I was looking.
Because I watched that movie like in preparation for the Tempcast. I mean, it's, if Steven put it, then fine. And it starts off with like goats and cows and monkeys being killed, like in farms.
They're being killed by like a dude in a green tunic, right? Is that's what I'm thinking of? That sounds right to me.
Yeah, it's just like documentary footage of animals being murdered.
Some dude in a green tunic is running around bombing some of the dongos. Is that what we're talking
faces
about?
Faces of death?
Because...
faces of evil. That's what I meant. I'm sorry. Oh, my bad. I'm sorry.
You silly goose. You silly goose. What about Faces of Evil, Steven?
So the two infamous CDI Zelda games that were made back in the 90s, Faces of Evil and The Wand of Gamelon, have gotten fan-made PC remasters this week, where basically someone went in and they remade these games to run on modern computers with controller support, and I believe they touched up the controls, well, because the CDI used a remote, like a TV remote, I think, as its controller. So it sort of like sped them up because they were real, they didn't run well before, and just made them look and run a lot nicer. And it's kind of an interesting project because these games are completely reviled, not only from a technical standpoint, but from an artistic and a design standpoint. And these PC remasters kind of remove a lot of those technical issues, so it lets you sort of see the games maybe as they were envisioned by the developers a little bit clearer. And so me and Cherry actually played a little bit of each of them today. They're still pretty bad. They're still not really worth playing, if I'm being honest. But if you're a Zelda fan and you're curious about them, they're worth playing, like, at least a little, just to sort of like, just to get a sense of what they're like. They're interesting little games.
So several years ago, well, I say several, it was probably close to a decade ago, I played Faces of Evil and Wand of Gamelon. I played them on a CDI emulator using a PS2 controller. So I didn't play it with the janky ass remote. But I thought, personally, playing it on the with that kind of controller was pretty not horrible. I thought that it was kind of fun almost. It reminded me
really?
It reminded me a lot of Zelda 2, which is also one of my favorite Zelda games. Just despite the fact that it's much harder and much, much different than any other Zelda game. I could see definitely where they were going with it. Clearly, we all make fun of the animation and the cutscenes and all of that. But at the time, we didn't know what Zelda didn't really have an identity at that point, really. Didn't these games come out? Was it
93, I believe. 93. Yeah,
so,
93.
So around the time that A Link to the Past came out.
Yeah.
Which was the third one. So at this point, the only two of them came out prior. So how are we supposed to know that this wasn't what Nintendo was envisioning or whatever? They were okay. You know, like I understand why they're reviled. I really don't want to say underrated because they're not that great, but they get more hate than is necessary. Oh, I know what to say. These are the Never Gonna Give You Up of video games. Like, that song is not a horrible song.
That song is really good. I listen to it unironically.
It is a good song.
It absolutely is.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, you're totally right. I didn't. Maybe I was being a little harsh. I don't necessarily think they're going back and worth playing as on their own merit because I did have a lot of issues with them. But they're not horrible. They wouldn't be remembered the way they are now if it wasn't for the controls and the technical issues. But like Faces of Evil, I found very, I guess this is sort of in the Zelda, I don't know, ethos, like, but I found it very obtuse and hard to find my way around. And I had a lot of issues with, like, kind of the difficulty. Like, a lot attacking is very finicky. The hitboxes and the hurtboxes aren't really intuitive in a way, or in a way that didn't feel fair. Enemies would spawn, like, right on top of me, which is standard for games of that time, but it just sort of, I don't know, it just hit hard. Like, yeah, they seem slightly unfair, but no, they're not. They wouldn't be remembered the way they are now.
I think the most annoying part of watching you play those CDI games was the art direction, in which it's hard to tell anything you're jumping on. It's hard to tell where the gaps are in the levels. It's just like they pasted like a blurry JPEG onto the back of the screen, and it's just like, okay, yeah, that's the art.
Yeah.
That did come up a few times. Yeah, that was annoying.
Yeah, I just want to know where Eric ranks the CDI games in the entire Zelda series.
And where do they fit into the timeline?
You know what? I don't remember right now, but I will say this. Before joining GBA Temp Mag staff back in 2015, I've reviewed every Zelda game, like, in my old, like, prepubescent brain of being like a 20-year-old, I put them alongside other games, and I think I rated them higher than some of them. I don't remember what the list is, but I'm sure it's somewhere in a folder called Fun Stuff.
Called Embarrassing Stuff.
This episode is just filled with stuff.
It's all kinds of stuff. Stuff cast.
So I actually just pulled up my Zelda reviews document. It was last edited on October 21st, 2014.
Wow.
So,
wow.
I guess I'll open it now.
It's almost old enough to be in bad stuff.
Oh, no. Is there a minimum age?
Where did I put Wand of Gamelon? Oh, wait, did I? Oh, I didn't put it on the list.
Gosh, you got us all hyped for that. Nothing.
Oh, my God.
It's
Faces of Evil.
This is a 23-page document, all single-spaced. Like, I really went ham with these reviews.
Wow. That's
Yeah, nope, they're not on here.
Can you post that on your blog?
I probably will. Yeah, I will. I'll be, like, completely unedited from 2014.
Yes.
Okay, Eric,
yes,
Eric,
do it.
I need your opinion right now. Were the CDI games better or worse than Link's Crossbow Training?
Oh, better.
Wow.
Oh, snap.
Better than Link's Crossbow Training. Much better.
Wow.
We should talk about the fact that the developer did something very interesting. First, he left it open for anybody to download.
Oh, yeah.
And then after, like, a couple of hours, he took down the links and said, like, oh, okay, guys, I didn't get a cease and desist from Nintendo. I just thought it was, like, my project, you know. I did it just for myself, and then I shared it to everybody. And then, you know, I don't want people to see this. You know, it's just a fun project. Like, that's some weird language right there.
I'm not saying I got a cease and desist, but I got a cease and desist.
I mean, it says right here in the NDA that I can't say I have an NDA, so...
In a way, I understand. It is possible that he really didn't get a cease and desist, and he really did want to not do it anymore. I remember one time I did a fan edit of Dragon Ball Super. I did the edit. I edited the movie of Return of Frieza with the series and made, like, a better movie. And I shared that with exactly three people. It's the definitive way to watch that movie. But I'm not sharing that on the internet because I'm embarrassed. So maybe he was, I don't know, maybe he just didn't. It's his own project that he wants to keep to himself. That said, it's already out there, so now we're all able to get access to it.
Yeah, I don't know. He also claimed that it was a joke between friends, and he said it was the perfect way to learn how to use Game Maker.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I don't totally disbelieve his story, mainly because I don't think Nintendo would cease and desist him within, like, 3 hours. I mean, maybe they would. I don't know. I can't say for sure. But
what if he did get a cease and desist, but not from Nintendo? So technically, he's telling the truth. What if he got a cease and desist from Philips?
Because, from Philips.
Oh.
Yes, listen. Philips knows that there's a lot of CDI fans. There's probably, like, 5 of them. So,
yeah.
What they're planning for the holiday season is a CDI Mini. That's right. And it's going to have all the 20 CDI games on it. That's why they're trying to protect their IP, which is basically not their IP if you think about it. But still, those games were co-developed, actually entirely developed by the Philips CDI team. It's possible we're going to get a CDI Mini. And you know what? Scalpers are going to buy it and you're not going to be able to get it.
I'm just really excited to play Hotel Mario again.
You know, I'm thinking about it again, and your Philips theory makes a lot of sense, because if Nintendo had brought the hammer on him, it wouldn't have been a cease and desist. It would have been child porn that was found on his computer. So I think you're really onto something here, Alan John.
That's a throwback to earlier in the episode for those who, for some reason, just jumped here.
Who wanted to know what Faces of Evil was. Or Faces of Death. I just said the wrong one.
So, you know how we were talking about Star Wars earlier, right? You know who my favorite actor from Star Wars was? Oscar Isaac. What is he up to these days?
He's a mod on GBA Temp. I think his name is Isaac. He's a pretty cool guy. Oh, wait. Did you just hear the news? Oscar Isaac is going to play Snake in the Metal Gear Solid movie. That's insane.
That's such a coincidence that I brought him up.
Yeah, I don't know how you do it, really. And I'm looking at the official post on gbatemp.net, and it's very interesting. Did Pranz make this image himself? Because
Deadline made it.
Oh, well, that makes sense, because I know Pranz is a smart guy, because on the left you got Oscar Isaac, who is supposedly playing Solid Snake, and on the right you don't have Solid Snake. That guy is Venom Snake. That's completely different guy. Won't get into spoilers.
Nerd.
But he's not even close to Sonic. Sonic Snake.
Snake the Hedgehog.
Can that be my next Smash Bros. DLC prediction? Solid Sonic.
Alan John would be like, this isn't Sonic, it's Metal Sonic. God.
Like, these characters are so different. I'm starting to think that this was done on purpose just to make me angry.
I think what happened is the Deadline was probably like, crap, we need snake.jpg. And Metal Gear Solid 5 Snake came up. He's even credited in the Deadline article. It says, Oscar Isaac and Metal Gear Solid's Solid Snake.
Ugh.
Image courtesy of Konami. I'd like to imagine that it was Konami that got it wrong, because Konami doesn't know each snake from their own game.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they definitely have no idea what they're doing.
I've been hearing about this movie for years now. I don't know at what point in development it is currently. I think the script is being written. I don't know if any production studio has signed this movie. But I have heard, like, couple of years before, maybe a year ago, that Oscar Isaac himself wanted to play the role of Snake. It's cool to know that the actor who's going to be playing the character has a concept, an idea. Who knows? Maybe Oscar Isaac is a huge Metal Gear fan. Who knows? Maybe he even played Metal Gear 1 and 2 on an emulator on his Xbox. Who knows?
The movie, I mean, it's easy to be cynical about video game movies, but it does seem to be in relatively good hands. The guy that wrote it, he wrote the Detective Pikachu movie, which is actually a pretty decent video game adaptation.
Yeah.
And the guy directing it, Jordan Voight Roberts, I think his name is, seems to be kind of into Metal Gear Solid. He released a little video a few years ago on the series' 20th anniversary, where he had a little message written out, and he got David Hayter to voice it as Snake, and sort of put out this sort of little tribute to what Metal Gear Solid means to him, and talk a little bit about the movie. And, like, it's... So, I don't know. I'm actually feeling pretty good about this movie, I think. And I like Oscar Isaac as an actor, and I think he'd be an alright Snake, so... I'm actually kind of feeling good about this movie.
But does Oscar Isaac know the difference between Venom Snake and Solid Snake?
I hope so.
He's probably as angry as Alan John is once he saw that Deadline article.
Well, here's the thing about that image is... we should probably update it and switch it to something else. Speaking of, have you guys heard this Nintendo Switch is stable as fuck right now?
It wasn't before?
No, it wasn't. It was broken. It was like 10 point some bullshit. Now it's 11.0.0 stable.
Gosh. Also, it's unstable because Atmosphere came out like a day later and ruined it. Yay!
Woo! I mean, boo! Or I don't know how to feel about that. Why is this important? Why are we talking about the Switch firmware update? Who put this down?
We struck Persona 5 Strikers from the record to talk about this Switch update, really?
I mean, you guys wanted to talk about, who is it, Abracadabra or somebody from Digimon?
Oh, yeah, I don't think I'm not. I will fight you over that choice for the rest of my life. For every other Tempcast episode I will guest star on, I'll be like, hey, Alan John, remember Kadabra?
You know what? That's it. We're talking about Kadabra. No. Sorry, Switch firmware.
Scream, Switch.
Oh, wait, what did you want to say about the Switch firmware?
I forgot my stability joke, so I have nothing to say. I've just got it.
There's like 300 comments in the update thread. I'm sure someone made that joke like 14 times over.
So this doesn't have like any major impact on the homebrew scene. Like a day later, Atmosphere released an update, so...
And no one was surprised.
Yeah. It's good to know that the hacking scene is active, I guess. So,
okay. you sound so disappointed.
How upset he is. He's so sad.
Yeah, we broke his spirit. Oh my gosh, I didn't mean to get so angry about Kadabra. I'm sorry.
I mean, I thought like Nintendo was... Oh no, we can't hack it anymore. It's done. It's this 11.0 update. I don't know if we can. Even SXOX doesn't work. It does. But no, it literally next day it was fixed. So whatever. Let's talk about the Digimon card game or whatever this fifth topic is.
So. A random man, who shall not ever be named, decided to go back on his decision that is almost as old as most of us to say, you know what? Kadabra cannot be in the Pokemon trading card game. I have the trademark on it, and you can't make a card with him anymore. Because he thought that the symbol on Kadabra's chest was the Nazi SS symbol. And he didn't want to be associated with it because his trick is called Kadabra. And even in his apology statement, he said, my Kadabra, I allow Nintendo to use my Kadabra, as if he's owned the Pokemon for like the past 20 years. But it's okay now. His Kadabra is free and Pokemon can now print his card in the TCG. So anyone that was collecting Abra and Alakazam, you can finally evolve him. It's a great day for all three players of the TCG on GBA Temp.
So wait, what was his lawsuit again? He didn't let them print Kadabra because he had a trick called Kadabra? Is that all it takes?
I think so. Like, he had the trademark or the copyright on it, and he took Nintendo to court saying it was causing him some sort of problem. Like, it was bad representation on his brand that they were allowing this Pokemon card with a Nazi symbol on it to exist.
Wow. So I'm looking at Kadabra. You said the symbol on his chest looked like the SS symbol? Because it has three S's.
Yeah, that's what Mr. No Name alleged.
That's already kind of
okay,
off.
Wait,
okay,
wait. So let me get this straight. He had issues with the Pokemon because the Pokemon was causing him issues? Is that?
Yeah. This card in specific is the United States release of the Dark Kadabra card.
Okay.
So if you want to get like a very specific image, go Google that. And that guy is what he took to court and was like, this card is bad. Get it out of my face. And then he tried to sue Nintendo for like $80,000.
Okay. It's just that maybe I can do this because there is a Pokemon that causes issues for me personally. It's Lopunny. From Generation 4. I'm just looking at the image of Lopunny right now, the official art, and it, just the official art, it makes me uncomfortable because that's like a bunny, but it's got thick thighs. I mean, oh my god, what am I even saying?
Is it in your bad stuff folder?
If you ban that poor Lop Bunny, half of the furry fan base of GBA Temp will drop dead.
Oh no, everyone in GBA Temp will drop dead.
Man. Do it, Alan John. Hit the switch.
I mean, remember that guy who tried to sue Twitch because of all the sexy streamer girls? Well, this is an issue for me personally. Lopunny, why is she drawn like that?
Yeah, I'm looking at her now. This is really weird. Some of the, like, I guess some of this is fan art, but it's really creepy. Like,
I mean, wait. Can't this Pokemon be a male as well?
Yep.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, you're gay, Alan John. Lopunny turned you gay.
Oh, what a horrible way to realize it.
I know. Just terrible news cascading down.
This is the worst podcast episode ever. This makes me feel bad.
Lopunny has a 50-50 chance of being male or female, so flip a coin. Are you gay?
Oh, my God. Flip a coin, Alan John. Roll the dice.
It's okay.
All right, so anyway, let's Persona 5 strike that from the conversation.
Hey, look at that. Smoothest transition ever.
Yeah, I'm well known for them, except I don't know what to say about this, so go ahead.
So, Persona 5 Strikers is finally coming west after a weird roller coaster of will they, won't they with Koei Tecmo. They kicked off 2020 by saying, yeah, we're going to bring this game to the west. They didn't confirm it officially. It was just snuck into their beginning of the financial year record. And then by the time that another quarter had passed, they had removed it and removed all mention of releasing it at all. And so people were like, what the crap? Are we getting it or not? And Koei Tecmo refused to say a single word about the matter. And then they still haven't said a word about the matter because the trailer went up on Atlas's YouTube and accidentally leaked before it was ready to be fully revealed.
Yeah.
But the best part of this is that Atlas has finally come through on their promise of being like, guys, listen. Like, every day for a month, they've been like, guys, listen, we saw that you bought Persona 4 on PC, and we're really happy, and we're gonna bring a game to the PC. Just please wait. We'll bring it to the PC, I swear. And now, finally, they actually listen. They're bringing it to Steam.
Yeah, a spinoff to a game that isn't on Steam.
Yeah.
Persona 5.
That's the greatest part.
Wait, Persona 5 Strikers isn't just Persona 5?
No. Persona 5 Royal is Persona 5. Persona 5 Strikers is a spinoff.
Yeah, this is the Warriors game.
The same way Persona 4 Golden is Persona 4, but Persona 4 Arena or Persona 4 Dancing are not Persona 4.
Do you understand now? It's easy.
Yeah, this is so simple. And only Persona 4 Golden and Persona 5 Strikers are on Steam. So if you're a PC Persona fan, you're out of luck, basically.
Here's the easiest way to describe it. So Kingdom Hearts Melody of Memory is coming out on the Nintendo Switch. It's on the Switch. No other Kingdom Hearts games are on the Switch, but that one is. So now you understand Persona through Kingdom Hearts.
Thank you.
The cultural touchstone that we all use to understand the crazy world around us. The binding tie that
everything begins and ends at Kingdom Hearts.
You can go to an undiscovered tribe in deepest, darkest Africa and talk to them about Kingdom Hearts, and it'll be like you've known each other your whole lives.
Yeah, well, they'll just talk about the Tarzan world.
Of course, it has everything.
I think the weirdest thing about Persona 5 Strikers is that it's coming to the PlayStation 4, which Persona 5 and Persona 5 Royal came out on, and then on the Switch, which has not gotten a Persona game at all, and then on Steam, which also only has Persona 4, which is entirely unrelated to this one. So two-thirds of the platforms, people aren't going to understand.
They have a history of doing this, too, because they did Persona 4 Arena and Persona Q on Persona 4 Arena was on the 360, and then Persona Q was a 3DS exclusive, and those games are both crossovers between Persona 3 and 4, and neither of those platforms had either of those games.
I guess Alice is just relying on loyalty for you to go out, buy the system, and slave over their games, which honestly, I feel like every Atlas fan was going to do that regardless.
Well, I mean, for a long time, people were saying that, like, basically the best reason, or possibly the only reason to buy a Vita was Persona 4 Golden, right? Like,
I think Persona 4 Golden is probably why anyone bought a Vita, honestly.
Yeah, that thing was stranded on the Vita for 8 years.
I bought 4 Vitas in the end, all of them for Persona 4 Golden, and I don't regret a thing.
Yeah. You need them all as backup in case anything happened to him one day.
Oh, I just looked back on Discord and apparently Steven posted a picture of sexy Lopunny. I'm done. I quit. Goodbye.
I hate this. You guys are, it's not funny. It's not funny. I'm done. I'm just out.
So Eric just left the studio.
I don't know if he's coming back. Eric?
No, he's gone. Goodbye, Eric. It was good knowing you.
Well, I guess we'll have to end the podcast now. Well, without Eric saying his goodbyes. Thanks again for watching or listening or whatever. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. Be sure to...
We have our YouTube channel. We've been doing more video reviews on YouTube. You should check them out also.
You absolutely should. We uploaded a review for this Mega Man knockoff. And I think Steven has a review up as well. Is that right?
Yeah, for this co-op game called Fogs. It's very adorable.
So anyways, check out the official GB Temp YouTube. And, yeah. Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye, you crazy people.